It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Good morning. It is time to get up with the Celtics, who have KO'd KD through two games. Does he have an answer, or are the Nets all done? Meanwhile, oh, what a finish. Fabulous Philly. If you didn't see what happened north of the border, you aren't going to believe it. We've got you covered. And then Debo, done in San Francisco. He says he wants out. What happens now? Will he be dealt in the next week before the draft? Those are the questions. We've got the answers as we get up with you, starting right now. And finally, the Greenbergs have taken over the studio, as we knew someday we would. My Uncle Seth, no relation, is in the house talking hoops, and that's not all. Look at the squad. Kmart is ready to go. RG3 is here. Tannenbaum is with us. And from Phoenix, Brian Windhorst gets up early talking basketball. Oh, what a game in Boston. Let's do it. The comeback of the night. The Celtics hosting the Nets, the critical game two. Marcus Smart named Defensive Player of the Year, and if you think he wasn't ready, think again. He's got the robe. He's got the honor, and he deserved it. All right, first half, much of it, Seth, belonged to the Nets. Their offense looked a little better.
Yeah, good job of moving KD in the action. Nice back cut. Floor is open. Easy scoring opportunity.
And they would lead by as many as 17, but then one of the big stories here is the Celtic defense turning into offense.
Yeah, invading his neutral space. Good hand pressure right there by Tatum, creating a turnover, taking him out of the game by adding another defender.
And then again, causing tough shots and turning it into points on the other end.
You get out in transition, play ahead of that Nets defense. Good job of attacking, and Tatum knocking down a big three.
Yeah, Celtics down 10 at the half, but with all the momentum in the world. To the fourth we go. Celtics down just two, and Jaylen Brown.
Yeah, Jaylen Brown, I thought, took over the second half. He did not settle, played downhill, played into the shot blocker's body, and finished.
And what happens here? KD off his leg.
Occupying that neutral space, great hand pressure by Grant Williams.
And then it's again Brown guarded by Irving, but they just can't stop him. And it's an 11-0 Boston run. Brown would lead the Celtics with 22. And then more. Durant, 0 for 10 from the floor in the second half.
And that's a shot you expect to make. Going to his left hand, nice pull up, just doesn't make that shot. Struggled in the second half, 0 for 10.
0 for 10. At first, worst half of his career. In the meantime, Jason Tatum, he would finish with 19 and then just over a minute to play. Say goodnight, Irene. Or Marcus, up and good. The Defensive Player of the Year doing it on the offensive end. Celtics come from 17 down. They take a 2-0 lead, and the overwhelming story was that man you saw there, Kevin Durant, and his struggles. He has shot under 40% and committed 6 turnovers in both games to start this series. It is the first time in his career, regular season or playoffs, that he's had consecutive games that bad. KD, what?
Just keep grinding. You know, I'm going to turn the ball over. I'm going to shoot the ball a lot in the playoffs. I mean, play a lot of minutes. It's on me to just finish it and figure it out. They're doing a good job of trying to cut off my scoring. You know, 2 or 3 people could test, or somebody there in the lane when I'm driving. So they're doing a good job. It's on me to figure it out.
All right, so again, with Seth here and Brian Windhorst up early, and Wendy, let's give credit where it is due before we dive into the Kevin Durant of this. He's not playing badly on his own. That is brilliant defense the Celtics are playing, and brilliant coaching.
Yeah, two things going on here. One, KD has never faced the kind of length and strength in a playoff series in his career. No team has ever been equipped like this with multiple defenders of the quality that the Celtics have. Plus, they don't have to worry about the Nets pressuring the rim. And that has enabled them to really, really get up on Durant and Irving and play very tight and very aggressive. And they're not worried about fouling him. They're pushing him. They're shoving him. They'll send him to the line because they think overall it's going to win. The other thing I want to point out here, I thought some of KD's mistakes were fatigue mistakes. And I'll go back to the fact that they had to play so hard in so many minutes at the end of the regular season. Kyrie and KD have now been playing 40-minute games for 3+ weeks.
That's going to be the reality of their situation if they're going to fight their way back into it. But I know you put some tape together to show just how this defense is attacking Kevin Durant.
Yeah, the Celtics are invading his space, making it hard for him to put a ball on the floor, pushing him out a step further, and then adding a second defender. Watch right here. You're going to see good pressure on the basketball. They see that second defender? He's basically in a soft trap. Hand pressure, looking for deflections. Two hands right there, get a deflection, get out in transition. Invade his space, get up and underneath him, push him out a step, commit a second defender to make someone else beat you. You think about 0-for-10 in the second half. He can't do it alone. Here's a second defender. Why is this happening? Because they're not moving the ball. They're not moving people. Look at the way they're playing offensively. Look at the way the Golden State Warriors are playing offensively. If you move the ball, move people, then you don't know where your help is coming from. Now, all of a sudden, he's going to have more space to play in. Right now, very sedentary offense. Everyone's in a spot. You know where your help's coming from. You can commit a second defender. You can pressure the ball.
And look, the frustration on some level as you watch it, they have Seth Curry. They have Patty Mills. They have Goran Dragic. They have guys who can make threes.
They have Kyrie Irving, who made the only field goal between Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving, 1-for-17 in the second half. So Kyrie Irving, he's also in the same category. What is coaching, though, in the playoffs? Playoff coaching is about adjustments. Playoff coaching is about not letting the other team's best players beat you. Coach Udoka, that's exactly what he's done. He's taken the two best players on the Celtics out of the game by adding a second defender and getting the ball out of their hands. Chess move for Nash now is, how are you going to get those guys to be more effective? You got to move the ball and move people and get them on the move as opposed to off the bounce.
But that's what everybody told me between game one and game two, when it did not seem they were paying attention. I don't know if they're not watching the show or what's going on here, but they don't seem to know what you and everyone else have said to me the last 3 days.
They did that the first 5-10 minutes of the game.
Right? And then?
They got Durant on the backcourt. Here's the thing. They got punched in the face a little bit. Instead of going back to doing what they needed to do, all right, they didn't have anything to rely on. Look at the Celtics. They got punched in the face in the first quarter, in the first half, until the last 4 minutes.
Yeah.
What did they do? They stayed true to their principle. They continued to do what they do. They continued to grind. They didn't deviate from what their game plan was. One team responded. One team didn't respond. That's just a fact. And I think that when you look at the Nets, they've got to find a way to move him and move Kyrie without just putting it in their hands, spotting guys up where all of a sudden the Celtics know exactly where their help is coming from.
Wendy, let's talk about the coaching matchup here, because Steve Nash has been questioned a good deal in this series, and the coach of the Celtics candidly right now is showing why he deserved consideration for coach of the year.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. Delicious, meet nutritious in the snack that packs a real protein punch. Wonderful pistachios, one of the highest protein nuts out there. Each 1 ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. Wonderful pistachios also come in a variety of flavors and sizes, perfect for enjoying with family and friends or taking them with you on the go. And you're on the go a lot, taking the kids to school, hopping from meeting to meeting, shopping for groceries. Well, the good news is, not only are Wonderful pistachios a complete protein, providing all 9 essential amino acids, they're also great for all your adventures. So whether you're a pistachio purist who loves cracking open every nut, or you prefer the convenience of no-shells pistachios, Wonderful Pistachios has got you covered. Grab Wonderful Pistachios and elevate your snacking game today. Visit WonderfulPistachios.com to learn more.
Well, look, here's the situation. Ime Udoka has put in 10,000 hours on Kevin Durant. He played against him as a player. When he was on the Spurs staff, he played against him in the playoffs when he was with the Thunder. He played against him on the playoffs when he was with the Warriors. Last year, he was assistant coach with the Nets. Then he was Team USA's assistant coach where Durant was on that team. Now he switches over here. He has gone through year after year after year, playoff series after playoff series, figuring out what you can do with Kevin Durant. So he's developed the game plan, and as I said, He now has personnel like we've never seen before against him. You put that full package together, and you are seeing a defensive masterpiece to this point. Because if Ime was standing here right now, he would tell you, I have seen this enough to know that Kevin can come back like a lion in game 3 and 4.
Well, so that's really the question I have, Seth. These games have been so dramatic, and it feels so epic that it's hard to remember that all they've really done is hold serve, right? They've won the two home games. It could turn around. It feels like more than that. How would you describe where this series is right now?
Where the series is right now is that Coach Udoka has found a game plan to get up and under and be physical with Kevin Durant. That's not going to change. The only thing that could change is how the games are being officiated. If all of a sudden those, when you get up and under and you pressure and you run a second defender and you play above them and you don't let them cut to the basketball, and if those become fouls, then it's a problem for the Celtics. If they aren't, this is a game plan that's going to work throughout the series.
We will have game 3 for you on Saturday night. We're actually doing countdown from the court. Wendy, let me come back to that. I promise we have plenty of time. I want to get you to the Sixer game last night, though. Let's go north of the border because we had one of the most remarkable finishes that you will ever see. Philly up 2-0 in this series, going to game 3 in Toronto last night. Desperation time for the home team. 30 seconds in the fourth quarter. Keep an eye on James Harden. He has 5 fouls. Now all of a sudden, he's got 6. They call him for fouling Precious Achiuwa. Harden can't believe it. His night is done, but Achiuwa would miss both free throws. So final 10 seconds, still tied at 95. Philly with a chance to win. Embiid, no. Tobias Harris, offensive rebound, gets a good look, but it doesn't go. And so we're going to overtime in Toronto, season on the line. Final 3 minutes of the OT. Sixers are down by 1. Embiid, how good a night did he have, Seth?
It's absolutely terrific. He just gets to the line, but more importantly, he can get to his spot. I'd like to see him to get to that left block a little bit more, but he does things offensively you cannot game plan for.
He had 33 and 13. Now here's the finish. Toronto tied the game with a free throw. Sixers get another chance. 10 seconds left. Achiuwa's going to poke the ball away from Embiid. Doc Rivers is racing on the court to call a timeout, and he gets it with just under 3 seconds to go. So the Sixers have one final chance to win the game. Take a listen to the call. Kate Scott, NBC Sports, Philadelphia.
Embiid turns, fires for the win. Joel Embiid and the Sixers take game 3 here in Toronto.
What a moment for Embiid. What a shot. What a brilliantly diagrammed play, which we'll get more into a little bit later in the program. 104-101. The Sixers take the commanding lead. And we are going to do SportsCenter that did a magnificent breakdown of exactly what was called in the huddle and exactly how it played out that we will show you. So give credit to Doc Rivers, who was frequently questioned. Give credit to Embiid for hitting the shot. That's an unbelievable finish.
A tremendous finish and a great play. A little misdirection. He ran, I'm not sure who they ran over the top, and then they screened in for Embiid, and he just stepped up and knocked down the jumper. And that's his versatility. That's why he's so difficult to play against. You know, you can isolate him on the block. You can step out. Just great execution and a great job of Doc getting that time out.
Wendy, the MVP votes have been in for quite some time, but that felt like an MVP moment for Joel Embiid last night, didn't it?
Yeah, and trust me, Embiid has not let a day go by where he hasn't thought about it, no matter what he might say publicly. You know, I was texting with some other coaches last night after watching this play, and it's not a new play. It's a jack-in-the-box play. But what is new and what was surprising was that they ran it for Embiid. That, giving your 7'2" center a runaway catch, turn, and shoot in less than a second, that is unique. And it totally caught the Raptors by surprise. They were worried about Embiid rolling to the rim. That was the ingenuity in the play. And Doc Rivers, on a bad knee, sprinting down to get the timeout and bail the 76ers out of that play. Doc's finest moment as the coach of the 76ers.
Yeah, that is an athletic moment from the former point guard.
He's pretty good athlete.
We have a lot more basketball coming up on the program, including I'm putting together my compadres. We got the NBA countdown crew. We will all be together 9:30 Eastern. So an hour and 20 minutes from now, we'll have Stephen A., Michael Wilbon, and Jalen all together talking hoops. And Seth and Wendy are with us all morning long. We'll get back to this in just a moment. But massive story from the National Football League. Did you see this yesterday? Deebo Samuel telling our Jeff Darlington that he has asked the 49ers to trade him. Samuel declined to offer specific reasons for requesting the trade, but acknowledged he has informed the team of his desire to leave. I will remind everyone, the first round of the NFL draft is a week from tonight, so there is all the urgency in the world with one of the best players in the NFL. Kimberly Martin, get us started. What do we know?
Oh, Greeny, stay tuned because this story is far from over. Here's what I can tell you. Debo did request a trade. It is not about the money. That's the crazy thing. It is not about the money. Debo knows there's money to be had, and he's going to get it. He's just not happy in San Francisco. But the interesting thing is the issues that he has, the concerns, they're hard to pin down. People in that building are confused as to why he doesn't want to be there as of right now. So the thing with Debo is he doesn't want to be there, but the San Francisco 49ers do not want to trade him. So there will be a lot of teams that will cover his services, but the San Francisco 49ers have to be willing to make that trade. And I would say, Greeny, the Jets, your team, they are primed to add a playmaker like this. The question is, will the 49ers want to deal him?
They are one of several. Let me put on the screen for you the teams that we've identified that have both the draft capital and the cap space to make some kind of move here on Debo. Cindy, when we can, let's put that up. We see the Saints could make a move. The Chiefs could make a move. The Jets could make a move. The Packers could make the move. And the Cowboys could make the move. All of them figure to have the draft capital and the cap space, because this will be a question, of course, not only of trading for Debo Samuel, but also signing him to one of the enormous contracts that receivers these days are demanding. So, Mike T, take us through how this works. If you are the general manager of the Jets or the Packers or whichever team we insert here, how does this work from this point forward?
Yeah, I'm calling John Lynch every single day, the GM of the 49ers, to see what it would take. And let's just stay with your New York Jets, Greeny. I'm looking at the 10th pick of the draft, and I'm saying to San Francisco, if there's a player that you really covet, we can make this trade literally while we're on the clock. We actually did that going back to 2009 with Mark Sanchez, where we actually traded players to the Browns with some picks to get Mark Sanchez, literally, Greeny, while they were on the clock. So you would want to try to get an agreement in principle with Debo's agent, which to me would be upwards of $28 million a year, well over about $70 million at least in guarantees. You could get that worked out in contemplation of a trade. And then on the clock next Thursday night, literally, we could see Debo Samuel going sometime in that first round.
All right, with all of the competition that is out there for him, we just showed you all of those teams. It becomes fascinating to see who's willing to wait that long, or does someone try and make a move even earlier than that? RG3, let me get you in here. Obviously, as a former quarterback, I mean, Debo Samuel is such a valuable piece, a weapon overall in that offense. What is your take on all this?
Oh, my take is it's the Jets. The Jets all the way. They are praying that Debo continues to try to Debo his way out of San Francisco. When you talk about taking pressure off of Zach Wilson, why not have him just drop back, throw a 5-yard shallow, and watch Debo take it 60 yards to the house? This guy's not just a number one wide receiver when he had 1,405 receiving yards last year, but he's also a number one catch and run wide receiver, just lethal with the ball in his hand. So I know there's some speculation out there about why he wants to leave San Francisco. No one really knows but him, his agent, and the 49ers. But if I'm the quarterback of the team that he might be going to in the future, I don't really care, right? Come on over, Debo. I'll throw you the ball. If you only want to play wide receiver like some people have speculated, that's fine, because he is dynamic and dominant at that as well. So this Debo Samuel trade right before the draft, or this chatter right before the draft, is something that's extremely fascinating.
All right, Mike Tannenbaum, two-part question. One, if I involve myself in calling the general manager of the 49ers, would that help? And second, and the serious part of the question, is let's talk about the teams that might make sense here, because obviously the Jets are in one position. Pardon me. They're sort of a building team, and he could come in and help their quarterback. I'm thinking about the Packers, who saw Devontae Adams leave, who have Aaron Rodgers here in a year-to-year world in which they live. That's one that I'm looking at. How do you see the situation there with the possibility of the Packers making the aggressive move here for Debo?
Completely agree. They're in the ultimate win-now mode, Greeny. So to me, they didn't want to lose Devontae Adams. I give up at least one of those first-round picks, something else to go get him. Because every day that I wake up as running the Green Bay Packers, I'm thinking, do I beat Tampa? Do I beat the Rams? What do I do to help myself there? Debo Samuel probably gets us over the hump. And as we've talked about on this show, and this bears repeating, Greeny, the most catches a rookie receiver has ever had with Aaron Rodgers is 38. So it's going to take a minute for whoever they draft to get up to speed with Aaron Rodgers. So clearly they would be better off with him. And by the way, I'm going to start a group text, me, you, and John Lynch, so you can make progress on that front as well.
Yes, get me his number, because if there's anything I can do to be of help here, I will most gladly do it. Kmart, jump in here with me. I apologize for the throat. Jump in here with me. What? Because you're obviously talking to everybody, and the whole football world was shaken up by this yesterday. What kinds of things are you hearing?
So this didn't come out of the blue, though. There were signs that there were issues there. You had the wide receiver market blowing up. You had Debo scrubbing his social media of any reference to the team. So this didn't come out of the blue. Him demanding a trade, when you think of you want to leave a Kyle Shanahan offense, why would you want to do that? Now, to Mike T's point, if I'm the 49ers, the last place I want to send Debo is to the Packers, because I'm guaranteed to run into them in the playoffs. I don't want Debo Samuel beating me in the regular season late in November, December, or in the playoffs. Again, I think the Jets make the most sense for five reasons. Greeny, the need, they have the long-term financial flexibility. They have the draft capital to do it. Oh, and guess what? They've got the Robert Saleh, Mike LaFleur, San Francisco connection. And reason number five is most important. It would make your day, Greeny. After they lost out on Tyreek Hill, they would finally have an explosive weapon for Zach Wilson, who is bound to win the Super Bowl this season, obviously.
All right, hold on. I'm writing all those down. Number four, I'm making sure I have them all for my presentation that I'm going to make to John Lynch a little later. I mean, RG3, again, for those, I think the world fell in love with Debo Samuel late in that San Francisco run and then into the playoffs. But can you just speak quickly as a quarterback to what he brings to your offense? If you're a quarterback, the weapon that he is and the comfort that he brings and the difference he would make for someone as accomplished as Rodgers or someone at the very beginning like Zach Wilson or anybody in between.
Yeah, I mean, you talk about the Packers. I agree with Kimberly. It's probably unlikely that Debo would go to the Packers because the 49ers don't want to trade him there. But when you talk about a quarterback, the fact that Debo's such a good separator, right? He creates separation in short areas. He can play in the slot. I think he led the league in yards per catch at 18.3, and he's still, I think he was like 65th in the league with how deep his routes were. So he had about 10 yards per catch in yak. Thank you, Himbo, for those facts. But he's just a guy that creates separation and creates big plays. I talked about it earlier. You throw the 5-yard hitch, the 5-yard shallow, or the 10-yard crosser, and he turns that into a 40, 50, 60-yard gain. I just think that's special about him, and that's only talking about him as a wide receiver. When you talk about his ability to move around and his versatility, that is awesome, but we are hearing that speculation that he only wants to play wide receiver, and if that's the case, he's still special and is a number one no matter what.
Okay, so again, this is an overwhelming story, and it figures to play out over the course of today and every day up until the NFL draft, which again is 1 week from tonight. We're just getting rolling. We have more to come here in football. What is the latest on Baker Mayfield a week before the draft? Could he be traded in the next few days? Could he actually wind up with the Browns' biggest rival? We'll talk about it. And then back to the Nets. They're in deep trouble. But could Ben Simmons coming back save their season? We're talking about that and more. It's a jam-packed morning. Get up on ESPN.
NBA fans, listen up. You've got to try Pick 6, the newest fantasy app from DraftKings, an official partner of the NBA. Getting started is simple. Select if a player will have more or less of a stat. For example, will a player have more than one rebound, or will a player have less than 3.5 assists? Pick your favorite players and compete for huge cash prizes. Download the new DraftKings Pick 6 app now using code PARLAY and take on the competition with your best NBA player picks. Only on DraftKings Pick 6 with code PARLAY. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 18 plus in most eligible states. Age varies by jurisdiction. Eligibility restrictions apply. Pick 6 not available in all states, including but not limited to Connecticut and New York. For up-to-date lists of states, visit dkng.co/pick6states. Void where prohibited. See terms at pick6.draftkings.com/promos.
All right, back on Get Up. And again, Uncle Seth, I mean, Joel Embiid with a shot for the ages last night.
What a great job. Catch, turn into it, knock down that three. But it's more than a catch. It's how the shot was created.
We are going to show it to you in great detail coming up a little later. The shot that most likely wins this series for the Sixers. What will it propel them to? We'll talk about all of that and more. You'll see exactly how it was diagrammed last night north of the border. Meanwhile, just how much trouble are the Nets in after Durant's dud? Is the cavalry coming in Brooklyn? We'll talk about it. And how much trouble are the defending champions in after a costly night in more ways than one against the Bulls? Lots of hoops still on the way. You're watching Get Up on ESPN.
your mornings with Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max. Every weekday at 6 a.m. Eastern, they answer the pressing questions around the sports world.
Let's talk about Steph's legacy.
They're going to probably draft an explosive guy.
And deliver their hot takes on breaking news and new developments.
The Lakers are one of the worst jobs in the NBA.
Tune in every weekday at 6 a.m. Eastern on ESPN Radio and ESPN2.
Back on Get Up, and if you missed it again, the comeback last night, the Nets had a 17-point lead in the first half at Boston, but in the fourth quarter, the Celtics had worked their way all back. Down by two, not anymore. Jaylen Brown led the Celtics with 22. That one tied it at 92. But the story of this game, Seth Greenberg, the struggles offensively for the Nets stars.
Get up and under Kevin Durant, eliminate that neutral space, pressure the ball, add a second defender, make it hard for him to make a play.
And Jaylen Brown getting it done again for Boston, and then the other end, Kevin Durant, 0 for 10 in the second half.
The ability to switch, that's a shot he usually makes. Going to his left, pull-up jumper, doesn't knock it down. Could not see a big basket.
They seem to have him frustrated. Meanwhile, Jason Tatum would make big shots. He had 19, and then with just over a minute to play, looking to put it away. On the night that he was honored as the defensive player of the year, Marcus Smart with the big offensive play that puts it away. The Celtics come all the way back. They win it 114-107, and there's so many angles to this story. But let me get Brian Windhorst in again, who's with us up early from Phoenix. The big story here is the possibility of the cavalry coming. What do we know about the chances that we could see Ben Simmons in this series for the Nets, and when?
Yeah, once he gets back to Brooklyn today, the process will be to ramp up into more 4-on-4 and then 5-on-5 play throughout the rest of this week and the weekend. They haven't ruled him out yet for game 3, but the more likely scenario, if he, again, I got to say, if he makes it through the weekend, because we're talking about a back injury that he still has, if he makes it through the weekend, the thought process is he could be cleared for Monday's game 4, which would be, I can't find another time in history where a player would play for the first time for a team in the middle of a playoff series, but here we are.
The possibility that it could come also with their backs fully against the wall if they lose. Game 3 is Saturday night in Brooklyn. Again, we'll be doing NBA Countdown from the floor there. Can you imagine, Seth, as a coach, what he would do in this series? I mean, picture this, the first two games of this series. Had he been involved, how does it change everything?
You don't know what you're getting. I mean, look, the guy hasn't played in a year and a half. What, right. You're getting a guy who can defend, who can push the ball in transition, maybe create some easy baskets. Not going to help your spacing. You're still going to be able to come off certain guys and double Durant. Double Irving, but what you're getting is an if. That's what he is. He's an if because no one knows what he can bring. Has he fixed his jump shot? No, he hasn't fixed his jump shot. Can he defend? He can defend if he's healthy. The guy hasn't played a competitive basketball game. You don't just flip that switch and all of a sudden be an all-star and an elite defender and an impact player. I don't think he can do it, and I don't think a team that's had so much controversy during the course of the season. Kyrie's playing, he's not playing. So many different lineups because of the situations with COVID and playing at home and playing on the road, not playing at home. I don't think he impacts the game the way everyone thinks he's going to impact the game.
And Woj, I've had a million conversations with him. We're talking maybe 10 to 15 minutes
at a clip. I can't imagine more than 15 minutes. I just can't imagine. You can't go from 0 to 100 and impact the team not having been with that group of players. Mm-hmm. This is not an AAU pickup game. This is the NBA playoffs.
Against a really good, cohesive, well-coached team in the Boston Celtics. And so, Wendy, for those who were just joining us and did not see your conversation or your thoughts at the top of our program today, Kevin Durant 0 for 10 from the floor in the second half, the worst half of his career, regular season or playoffs. To what do you attribute that? What's the single biggest factor that has led to Durant's struggles in this series?
The array and size of Boston's defenders. They have three or four different guys with size that they can put on Kevin Durant. I covered a series about 10 years ago where Durant struggled kind of like this when he played the Memphis Grizzlies when they had Tony Allen. But Tony Allen was 6'4" and there was only one of him. But he was a dog on defense. The Celtics have a bunch of dogs, and they're 6'7", 6'8", 6'10". They can rotate them around on him. And look, you are right, Greeny. You mentioned this earlier about trying to get him with the fouls, you know, complaining about trying to get more fouls. Actually, Seth said that. But he drew 13 fouls last night. Al Horford fouled him a few times. He fouled out of the game. The Celtics are not afraid of fouling him. They would rather rough him up and foul him and send him to the line than have him feel comfortable.
All right, we will see again. Game 3 of that series, which you would figure is an absolute must-win for the Nets will be on Saturday night in Brooklyn. In the meantime, the performance of the night. Let me get you to Milwaukee and what happened there last night. It was a show put on, Seth, by DeMar DeRozan, who had a fabulous season for the Bulls, and last night might have been his finest moment.
Absolutely. He can get to his spot anytime he wants it. Oh, by the way, the middle game, alive and well in Chicago.
And maybe the only place, but it's sure for those of us who are old school basketball fans, to see a guy doing it with that mid-range game. Bulls a 14-point halftime lead. Then here's a terrible moment for Milwaukee, Chris Middleton.
Yeah, they cannot survive without Chris Middleton. You talk about a guy, every Batman needs a Robin. He is the perfect Robin for Giannis. Him going down, especially as well as he was playing in the third quarter, huge.
He was a sprained MCL. We'll get an update on his injury. Meanwhile, Giannis trying to do it by himself. Bucks within eight. You know who's watching? Aaron Rodgers in the house. He liked what he saw, but he wouldn't like this. 6 minutes, 1 minute to go, I should say, down by six. Brook Lopez gets it up and good. They're right in the ballgame. But go back to Mr. Reliable when you need a bucket for Chicago. It was DeRozan at the end.
Great back tap right there. DeRozan doesn't settle. They're trying to give a foul right there, but not. He's not settling. He's playing downhill. He's going to get to the rim. What a great finish right there. Right up into the body of Giannis.
41 points for DeMar DeRozan, who was 16 of 31 from the floor. And the Bulls, who could easily have won game one of this series. There was a controversial foul call that went the other way. And Milwaukee winds up getting the win. And now the Bulls steal game two. And Chris Middleton goes down. Wendy, let's start with that. I know it's very early in the morning at this point. What do we know about Chris Middleton's injury?
Boy, this was a big news situation that happened late last night that could impact a big part of the Eastern Conference playoffs. The initial testing in Milwaukee, I am told, is a mild MCL sprain. Now, that is good news. And the MRI today, the Bucks are hoping are going to confirm that. But a mild or grade one sprain, the average return from that type of injury is 2 to 4 weeks. So even in the best case scenario here, you are looking at Middleton being out the rest of this series and then potentially impacting the next series should they advance. The Bucks are leaning on the fact that Brook Lopez has given them a huge boost in offense, way more than they thought they would get coming off back injury. But obviously this is a real blow to the defending champs.
I want to make sure you understand the numbers you're seeing on your screen. When the big three of Milwaukee, Giannis, Middleton, and Drew Holiday are together, they're 86 and 34. Those numbers fall off substantially, barely above 500 when they lose any of them. And so Middleton, 2 to 4 weeks, that's a long time. That's the rest of this series with Chicago, and the winner of this series gets the winner of Boston and Brooklyn. So where does this leave the defending champs right now, Seth?
Think about their championship a year ago. Think about the big plays and the big shots that Middleton made.
Yeah.
You know, Giannis took him through that championship game, but Chris Middleton is the perfect complement to Giannis. You talk about a guy who can make big shots. He can rebound the ball. He's a willing passer. He defends. He's got a physicality to his game. Look at the guys that can replace those minutes and that productivity. Pat Connaughton, maybe? I'm not sure they have a replacement for him, whether it's one game, 1 week, or 2 weeks. This is huge. I don't know. Maybe Aaron Rodgers comes out of retirement and decides to play basketball. I don't know.
We'll see. He's got some time free right now. But let's not let this conversation end, Wendy, without giving some love to DeMar DeRozan. There was a moment in time during this regular season where his name was in the MVP conversation. They fell off precipitously late in the year, but he was brilliant last night.
Yeah, and particularly they were terrible all season against the top teams in the league, and they were not regarded as a serious contender in the conference because of that. And DeRozan had a poor game one, 6 of 25 shooting. He said last night that on the off day, in between games one and two, he came into the Fiserv Forum at night. They let him in the building. I'll bet they won't do that again to work out his shooting and feel better. And he obviously had a dramatically improved game. Also, Alex Caruso with absolutely brilliant defense and playmaking last night, showing his postseason experience.
And by the way, these games in this series come fast and furious now. Game three is tomorrow night in Chicago. Game four is early Sunday. So no resting uptime here for Middleton. Again, we'll get an update on that as we go. And much more basketball on the program today, including my companions from Countdown. They'll be here with me to talk all through last night's action. Stephen A., Jalen, and Wilbon on Get Up today, 9:30 Eastern here on ESPN. Other enormous news, as if we needed more yesterday. Hall of Fame coach Jay Wright is retiring after 21 seasons at Villanova, a shocking move that comes just weeks after he led the Wildcats to the Final Four. Fordham's Kyle Neptune, who spent 10 years under Wright as a video coordinator and assistant coach, will take over. And so just fortuitous that we have Seth here today to talk NBA, but obviously this is your primary area of expertise is the college game. What's your reaction to this news about Jay Wright?
Sad day for college basketball. Happy for Jay, but a sad day for college basketball. I mean, look, think about what he's done. Two national championships, an Olympic gold medal, ran a model program. The culture of Villanova basketball is the best in the country. He survived one and done by doing it his way, with attitude and basically getting guys to buy into playing for those who played before him, which is their motto. With NIL and the transfer portal, I'm not sure Jay felt that he was capable of continuing to do it that way. But if you think about the great ambassadors of our game, you think about the guys that other people want to emulate and be like, it's Jay Wright. He's going to be missed in our game, because I got 10 phone calls last night from all head coaches, and they all said the same thing. How are we going to replace Jay Wright in terms of the leadership of the future of college basketball? That's how good he is.
He's also only 60. He's a very healthy man. He's in unbelievable shape. Candidly, he doesn't look 60. Do you think we will ever see him on the sideline again, either on the college or on the pro level? Now, I should tell everybody, Woj tweeted last night that while there has been a lot of pro interest in Jay Wright, that the expectation is that this is truly a retirement. But you know him well. What is your sense?
Yeah, I don't want to speak for Jay. I think he's really comfortable with his decision. I think that, you know, he's put in 60 years. He loves what he's doing. Obviously, he had that Olympic experience working with Pop. And he said, by the way, that Olympic experience, more pressure than he's ever been under in coaching, that Olympic experience, especially after they lost that first game. I think he's really comfortable in his own skin. I don't think he has anything else to prove. I'm not saying you never say never, but I think he'll go on and live his own life.
We certainly will have a lot of options. We will see an unbelievable career and a member already.
He'll be sitting here next year, probably.
Of the Hall of Fame. He might be sitting here. We'll see how it goes. In the meantime, coming up, what is the latest on Baker Mayfield with the draft 1 week away? Could he be traded in the next few days? We'll answer that question next. You're watching Get Up on ESPN.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use the code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use the code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Back on Get Up with your wake-up call. Kate Scott and Ala Abdelnaby on the call. NBC Sports Philadelphia.
Embiid turns, fires for the win. Joel Embiid! And the Sixers take game three here in Toronto.
And the crowd is silent. Everybody, mouth shut. Not a peep out of anybody in this building right now.
What a finish for Philly. Think about the way Toronto knocked them out a couple of years ago, and now they turn it around. And for Embiid, it's his first career game-tying or go-ahead shot in the final second or fourth quarter or overtime. He was 0 for 14 on those shots entering this game. I'll have the NBA countdown group together in 45 minutes with Total Reaction. Meantime, back to the NFL, where Baker Mayfield remains a member of the Browns, despite his public discontent with the organization and their obviously giving up on him. Here's their coach, Kevin Stefanski, yesterday, asked about the latest as his team begins the voluntary offseason program.
That's a unique situation. It's fluid, and we'll just continue to work through it as we go each day. It's a voluntary program. You know, what we won't do is we won't say who's here, who's not here. It's voluntary. The guys that show up, we're excited that they're here. We're excited to work with them, but you know, guys that were here yesterday might be here Monday. Guys come in throughout the weeks.
Okay, we can cut through that. Basically, what he's saying is Baker's not here and he's never coming back. So what we know is that he's not going to wind up being on the Browns. What we don't know is what exactly is going to be the action point, the inflection point that makes that happen. Mike Tannenbaum, you're my general manager. When and why will this finally come to an end?
My sense of it, it could be as early as Friday during the day. So let's just take Carolina, a very likely landing spot for Baker Mayfield. If for whatever reason they don't draft a quarterback at six, I could see on Friday a trade being made, let's say for a fifth round pick in 2023. And then the negotiation really, Greeny, is over how much does Cleveland eat of that $18 million? And let's just say they eat two-thirds of it. Now Carolina comes out of this maybe with their starting quarterback at really good value. So his price is going down. Every day he's a Brown, it's more likely they're going to have to eat more of his contract. And Cleveland just has to hope either a team like Seattle or Carolina doesn't draft a quarterback on Thursday night.
So let's make it clear. When you say Friday afternoon, you mean next Friday after round one of the draft has come and gone. And we will assume that both Malik Willis and Kenny Pickett, the most coveted quarterbacks in this draft, have gone off the board. And let's say Carolina doesn't take either of them. Now, all of a sudden, they have a need. So you make that deal before rounds two and three on Friday night. RG3, you're smiling. This is a situation you have lived personally, you know, with all these kind of machinations. What is your number one take on this Mayfield situation?
Greeny, I'm just flabbergasted at how the Browns could mismanage this situation so poorly. They needed to trade Baker before the ink dried on the contract for Deshaun Watson, but now they have no trade leverage, and it's partially because of what they did in the media. They trashed Baker in the media through sources saying that they needed an adult, and then they won Deshaun Watson's commitment through the Deshaun Watson sweepstakes, and now they're stuck with a quarterback, right? They're up the creek without a paddle and with a quarterback that they don't want and an $18 million price tag. So teams know that they have no leverage, and the Browns don't want to have to cut Baker Mayfield and see him go somewhere else, like say the Pittsburgh Steelers, where they're essentially paying Baker Mayfield to go play for one of their rivals. So the key is going to be the draft, like Mike T stated, and if a team doesn't get the guy that they want in the first and or second round of the draft, they could come calling the Cleveland Browns and say, hey, we'll take Baker Mayfield now. But the Browns currently have no leverage.
Fascinating. That's such excellent insight. Kmart, let me come to you here because obviously you're talking to everybody. What are your takeaways from what is becoming an increasingly fascinating situation?
So, Greeny, I will say off the bat, I was never an NFL quarterback, so I don't look at it from that perspective. And when I look at it from the outside, to me, Baker Mayfield is the one who has the least amount of leverage here because we talked earlier about Deebo Samuel. He might want to be traded. The San Francisco 49ers determine whether he's going to be traded. Same thing with the Browns. I know some teams are looking at some of these draft prospects and trying to decide, do we want to go with the cheaper option? What we're going to wait to see how the draft shakes out. The Browns don't feel forced to do anything with Baker. Like, he's on their roster. And I know some teams might feel like, you know, we'll just wait out the Browns. They got to release him at some point. You know, we're going to pick him up at that point. But the Browns, it's not ideal, but they technically could hold on to him. It's not a situation that you would want, but that still is an option. Now, as far as leverage goes, you know, the Browns went after the quarterback they wanted. Kevin Stefanski saying this is a unique situation. It's really not. You upgraded at the quarterback position. That's what you wanted to do. Now you just got to get rid of the guy you didn't want. That happens in the NFL all the time.
RG3 just became the second person on the show in as many days to mention the Steelers as a possible destination for Baker Mayfield. Kmart, what do you think?
Okay. The petty person in me loves that idea. The AFC North ESPN correspondent apparently in me loves that idea. And when I think about Mike Tomlin, though, I can't imagine Mike Tomlin. Think about who he is. He's a guy that says stuff like, the standard is the standard. We don't make excuses. We want volunteers, not hostages. And then you bring in Baker Mayfield, who literally is talking about how he's been wronged by an organization and a front office that didn't draft him. So I don't know if that pairing makes sense, but the juiciness of Baker Mayfield wanting to stick it to his former team, I love that. That is delicious.
Mike T, let me just ask you, how does that sound to you as a team builder? You would have Baker Mayfield, who was once the first pick in the draft. You have Mitchell Trubisky, who was once the second pick in the draft. Both of them have, well, I mean, their careers have led where they've led. Everyone knows where they are right now. How does that sound to you as a quarterback situation?
I think it's really intriguing for Pittsburgh, and here's why. If I'm Baker Mayfield, I'm paying the Steelers as an investment for all the reasons Kmart just listed. And we have experience with this, screening. In 1998, at the Jets, we signed Vinny Testaverde in June, former first pick overall, who up until that point was somewhat of a disappointing career. We went to the championship game that year. So if I'm Baker Mayfield, I'm paying the Steelers to go there to invest in my career, let the best players play. They got a great defense. And if anyone's going to maximize his gifts, it'll be someone like Mike Tomlin to learn how to tamp down the noise. So I think that could be a real marriage of convenience. And if I'm Cleveland, worst case scenario is not eating $18 million. Worst case scenario is eating $18 million and seeing him put on a Steeler uniform.
That's fascinating, RG3. You did a great job bringing that up. All right, let me leave that there for the moment. I have so much to get to today. I need more than 2 hours. In the meantime, our action-packed April rolls on with these featured ESPN Plus events. Saturday, German Classico. We got Bayern and Dortmund. Then we got Tyson Fury putting his belt on the line against Dillian White at Wembley on ESPN Plus pay-per-view. We got the 120th annual Copa del Rey final between Real Betis and Valencia. And then the series finale of Tom Brady's Man in the Arena drops Tuesday night at 11 Eastern. So a little something for everyone on ESPN+. Coming up, what's wrong with KD? How much trouble are the Nets in after falling apart in Boston last night? The Countdown crew joins me live in a half hour here on ESPN.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart?
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes!
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.